Welcome to .NET Rambles, a weekly podcast where Andy and Rowan discuss all things .NET related. Hey, Rowan, how are you doing?
Very well, Andy. How are you doing? It's been a while.
It has been a while again. Yeah, as always, things get in the way. Life sort of happens and time flies by.
Yeah, and so does the rain, evidently, in the UK. It feels like it's been raining for months over here, although it hasn't been months, but it feels like weeks.
It does. When it doesn't stop, it feels like it, doesn't it? It's weird as well. It literally flip-flops in the UK, doesn't it? I remember a few months back we were on a drought warning.
Yeah, and, exactly. Now we're on hosepipe flood warning. Restrictions, and now we're on the opposite, aren't we? Yeah. Although, to be fair, there's probably still hosepipe restrictions.
I think there was. I think one got lifted a few days ago, which is absolutely crazy. But, welcome to the UK.
Yes, exactly. What are we talking about today?
So today, we are talking about our website, our podcast website, and how we built it, why we built it, and what we built it with.
Yeah, the .NET Rambles site. It's quite an interesting little project, isn't it? So it's certainly worth an episode.
Yeah, absolutely. It was quite good because obviously we needed one. We decided after we sort of recorded these and sort of thought, where are we going to put them? And rather than using sort of a hosted solution that sort of some of the podcast sites give you, we thought we'd write our own, seeing as we're devs and we do that sort of thing.
Exactly. And a slightly different approach to your standard .NET sort of site approach. But let's get into that after our random fact.
Go for it. Yeah, let's hear what you've got today.
Well, given we're on a podcast, I thought a random fact about the concept of podcasting might be a good thing to talk through. So do you know when the term podcasting was introduced, who was coined by?
Do you know what? I've got no idea. It's one of those weird things. You just know it's been around forever. I can't remember the first time I heard it or when I used it or sort of seen anything about it.
Yeah, interesting. I wondered the same thing. And apparently the term podcasting was coined by a journalist called Ben Hammersley in a newspaper article for The Guardian back in February 2004.
Wow. Nearly coming up 20 years ago. Wow.
Yeah, almost 20 years ago. It's incredible, isn't it? Yeah. And so in that article, he suggested that all the ingredients were there at the time for a new boom in amateur radio because, radio was the thing back then. Things like MP3 players, Apple had its iPod, there was audio production software become cheap and free, and blogs, weblogs were all established by that point in time. They're all an established part of the internet. But he sort of wrestled with the idea of the fact that, we could have this new boom, but had no idea what to call it. So he suggested, maybe, is it going to be audio blogging? Is it going to be guerrilla media? And then eventually sort of came up with this term of podcasting.
Brilliant.
Internet radio and amateur sort of internet-based radio was already in existence. And a guy called Adam Curry, who was a former MTV video jockey and a software dev called Dave Weiner, coded a program known as iPodder, which enabled them to download internet radio and broadcast, basically, listen to those internet radio programs on their iPods. Okay. So this essentially was the first podcasting downloading software.
Claim to fame, yeah. Wow.
Incidentally, Adam Curry now hosts a thing called the Daily Source Code, which I haven't listened to, but apparently it's popular.
It's not on my list either. I'll have to have a look at that.
Yeah, popular long-running podcast on the internet. So it was around about that time, 2004, 2005, big companies started to get involved and they recognized the opportunity in podcasting. So Apple led with iTunes 4.9, providing support for podcasts. Back then, George W. Bush became the first president to deliver a weekly address as a podcast in 2005. 2005 was also the year in which the word podcast was declared the word of the year by the new Oxford American Dictionary. So it was all happening.
Yeah, becoming in mainstream, I guess.
Yeah, it started to become mainstream. And then a year later in 2006, Steve Jobs demonstrated how to create a podcast using GarageBand. And apparently Ricky Gervais set a world record for the most downloaded podcast with over 250 million people downloads per episode of the Ricky Gervais show during its first month. So I do remember hearing
about that, actually. I remember he set the world record, but yeah, strangely, I wasn't one of those people that downloaded it.
Neither was I. Yeah. But there you go.
Funny, isn't it?
Interesting. Almost 20 years ago.
Yeah, wow. That's really interesting, actually. Yeah, like that. That's good. And it's just become sort of the norm now, isn't it? Everybody listens to them, and it's a way of getting information out there and chatting to your audience. So yeah,
exactly. I find it a really valuable way of getting information, particularly particularly if I'm traveling somewhere or driving somewhere on a long train journey or commuting. Podcasts have always been the way for me.
Absolutely. Well, we use it all the time in the car now with when we're sort of driving. My son is keen to listen to podcasts now, so I got him into it a bit. And we listen to a thing called Darknet Diaries. We have to be a bit careful of which ones we listen to. But we listen to those, which is quite interesting. He finds those quite good fun to listen to. So,
yeah, good stuff.
Excellent stuff.
All right.
Right, well, I'll jump into the main bit then about how we built our podcast and you know, what we did with it and what we used and why we used it. So we built it over a couple of days, didn't we? We sort of we had a chat about it. And it's one of those things, again, just a bit like this. You know, we started recording these podcasts after we had a conversation about all the chats we were having, and wouldn't it be useful if we recorded them? Because we talk all this stuff about dev and tools and people, and we thought, well, it might be useful. Other people might like to listen to this. And you do, you hear conversations sometimes. They're a bit like, I mean, in America, they call it the water cooler chats, don't they? Where
you
gather around and you hear things and you chat. So we thought that was why it'd be good to sort of record some of these and just chat about stuff that we talk about all the time. And that was how .NET Rambles was born. And we recorded a few episodes, mentioned loads of tools and websites, and we kept sort of, you know, you hear in other podcasts people say, oh, I'll add it to the show notes, and of course we couldn't do that because we didn't have anything to add it to. So
we had nothing, did we?
We thought we'd better get sorted out with that. So yeah, we thought,
I'll let you into a little secret. I think in those earlier episodes we did say, look, we'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
You know, and that was even before we had any
sort absolutely of that's right around. Yeah we knew we had to do it. It's just getting around to it, wasn't it? We're doing it. But yeah, that was basically where the podcast.netrambles.com website came from. So after we talked about it, we went away. I think you went away and started building the F# code to build the website part of it.
Well, that's an interesting point, actually. Those conversations that you're referring to, a number of them were centered around F# due to my slight obsession with F#. And me trying to sell the idea of you learning F# into you. So so that was a great excuse for me to push the idea of using F# for our site, wasn't it?
That's right. I mean, that's what we did. We sort of said this sort of thing. Whenever you're doing these sort of things, the best way to learn it is to actually do it, because you can read and read and read, but until you actually start doing these things, it doesn't really sink in. So you got the task of writing the F# code. And I went away and started doing the page templates for the actual layout, didn't I? So we sort of split it up that way. And basically, as you just said, the only reason we did that is because I couldn't get my... I think I'd still be writing the F# code now, to be honest.
To be fair, you picked it up really well.
I did a few bits with it. It's a little bit confusing when you first start with it. But yeah, suddenly you go through it and it's a different way of doing it, that's all. Like we did a podcast around this, didn't we? Number 18, F#, what is it good for?
Yeah.
So there's more to listen to there. But yeah, it's the same sort of thing. It's just getting your head around it, starting to learn it and understanding what it's for. But it's useful having somebody like you to actually sort of build it and then explain what the bits are doing, because it starts to make more sense.
Yeah.
Because like I said, initially for a C# dev looking at F#, the syntax is similar in ways. You've got keywords, you've got layout of it, but the concepts are very, very different in the way you're actually meant to do it. So yeah.
Yeah, they are. And F# being a hybrid language, we don't want this to become an F#. Episode specifically, but it's worthwhile touching on, because F# is a hybrid language. You know, it's got functional aspects and it's also got object-oriented aspects. And a lot of the time, if you're coming into F# from C#, which most, 99% of people are, you approach writing F# code the same way that you'd write F# code.
It's just natural. Yeah.
Using an object-oriented paradigm. And you can do that in F#. But in some ways, it's good to also step back and try and look at F# from a functional perspective. So that's the thing that takes a bit of learning, doesn't it? To sort of get your head thinking in that F# sort of way of thinking, rather than in that functional F# way of thinking, rather than in an object oriented F# way of thinking.
No, absolutely. So that's what we decided. So we sort of decided to split the task up like that. So I'll pass over to you, and you can tell us some of the tools that we use for it.
Yeah, so if I start from the front end, so we use quite simply Bootstrap 5 for the site layout, because you know everyone does that and it's easy to get up and running, and we're not designers. And
I was going to say, it makes you look like a good designer, doesn't it? Even though it normally looks like every other site on the internet. But
yeah. Exactly. So, you know, fairly stock standard there. Source code's in GitHub. We use GitHub Actions to build the thing, and we'll talk through that in a bit more detail in a little while. But in a nutshell, we use F# to build the site into a static site, and then we deploy it out to Netlify, but we'll come back to that. You've already touched on the fact that we're using F#. Basically, F# goes through, processes the podcast RSS feed, and then takes all the content, bungs it into some HTML templates, and generates the site as a static site. And we've also got a little search thing built on top of that that we'll come to. So we're using Anchor RSS feeds for the actual content of each of the podcast episodes. We use a bit of Markdown for the show notes, which is straightforward and easy to manage. Yep. Using Netlify to actually host the site. So Netlify being a static hosting service, we do the site generation using the F# code. We did start using an Azure web application for our search API, but after sort of realizing that that would start to cost us money, we moved to Algolia, didn't we, searching episodes, which is nice and free. And we've got the domain registration through Cloudflare.
Yeah. Excellent.
So in a nutshell, those are all the different sort of elements that we're using.
Yeah, all free tools for it, basically.
All free tools, which is good, you know, a bit of a spoiler alert, but basically adds up to a monthly cost of what?
It's around about zero pounds a month.
Which works well for us, doesn't it?
Like not putting our hands in our pockets for that, absolutely.
That's fairly sustainable from our point of
view. And that was one of the key drivers, wasn't it, around this? We did decide right at the beginning of building it. It's like, let's see if we can do this for no cost whatsoever.
For no cost, because this thing doesn't generate any revenue at all.
No, we've decided to keep away from ads and stuff like that and try and keep it. It's literally just, we want to record what we're talking about and get it out there. If people want to listen, we're not trying to push ads to people. We're not trying to monetize it. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah, got to keep it cheap.
So it might be worth us talking through the process that we use to publish a new episode. So we're recording this today. How are we going to take this episode and get it up on the site?
Yeah, so it's a fairly straightforward process. We've got it sort of down to sort of three steps, really. We sort of, like you say, we record this now and we'll publish it. And once it's published, obviously it appears in the RSS feed. But prior to that, we take the show notes that we write. And as you said, we use Markdown. And what we do is we basically pull those straight out of Notion, which is pretty much Markdown anyway. So we pull it out, it's in Markdown already. We can format it up, see what it's going to look like. Grab any images that we want to include in it. So it might be a screenshot of something we're doing or a tool that we've mentioned. And we'll put images in some folders. Grab the show notes, put those into a folder. All sort of, it's named in particular ways so that it all picks itself up. Keywords go into a file as well in case we want to make it searchable. And then once we push all that into GitHub, it triggers the action, which, as you said, it then runs the F# code that we've written that literally just parses the RSS, builds out the site using the templates, and then populates search index, generates a zip file, and push it up to Netlify.
Yeah.
So it's a fairly simple process, really. Once we've got everything in place, it's very quick to do. So the main guts of it really is in the F# code that generates it. So it might be worth going through a bit of that and explaining what that is and how that works.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So, I mean, you've covered it at a high level, but we're using F# in .NET 6. And basically all the F# code is a console app. So it's a standalone console app that pretty much has the following workflow. So the first step is that it consumes the RSS feed. So that Anchor RSS feed that actually contains the content of each episode. The F# console app basically works through each of those episodes and builds a model in memory. And we're actually using F# type providers, which is quite useful and quite easy to work with. We're using the RSS type provider, and we basically point the RSS type provider at our feed, and the type provider says, "Oh, I can recognize the shape of that XML. I'll therefore build you a model in the background." So we use that model and we generate our our own sort of little episode model, which we then take and we pump that into the Handlebars HTML template.
Yeah.
We then use handlebars.net to generate out some static HTML files. So for each episode, we get a new HTML file. Mm-hmm. And we've accounted for things like a hero image for each of the episodes. You know, our little intro piece of text and the show notes all get pulled in into each of those HTML files. And we also do a little thing where we update the index HTML file, which basically lists that new episode on the index file. Then on top of that, we populate our search index. So prior to us using Algolia, we were using Lucene.net. And we were simply taking that model that we generated in memory of the episode, and we were using Lucene.net to update a little search index, which again was stored with the static site. No, it wasn't. Correction. It was stored up on Azure, wasn't it?
Because that's right. We pushed it. We had to push that to Azure because it was code that ran.
Yeah, it was code. It was sort of basically dynamic server-side code, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We no longer do that because we found that we almost had to start paying for that compute time, that server-side compute time. So we've now moved to Algolia.net. And the population of the search index in Algolia is simply an API endpoint call. So we basically pass our episode model through to Algolia and it indexes off the back of that. And then finally, the final step is for us to push to Netlify, which is actually done as part of the GitHub action. So if we just step back and think about how all of that, how that F-sharp code is orchestrated, we basically push code up into GitHub. That triggers a GitHub action. GitHub pulls the F-sharp down, builds our console app, and then runs the console app. And the console app goes off, gets the RSS feed, pulls the content of the RSS feed, pumps it into the HTML handlebar template, generates the static site bundle, and then takes that static site and pushes that off to Netlify to publish the new version of the site.
Yeah,
so it's an interesting approach, isn't it? Because it's not your standard .NET sort of server-side running site.
No, that's right. No, we decided quite early, didn't we, that it doesn't change that often. You know, that we ideally record these once a week. Sometimes it's a bit more. So it's not going to change that often. So the indexes don't change that often. The HTML won't change that often. So it didn't really make sense to have a server driving this. It's, you know, a big driver recently is for static site generators. And, you know, that's basically what we're doing. We built our own little static site generator, which is very unique for what we do.
Yeah.
We very probably could have easily plugged it into any of the site generators out there, but it was just, obviously we're devs, it wasn't a big project, we're not reinventing the wheel that much. It needed to be a bit unique for what we wanted, so it gave us complete flexibility, really.
It did, didn't it? And it might be worth talking through just some of the advantages of going static versus server side. One of the big advantages that we've already mentioned is we're not paying for compute time, are we? Sure. You know, we're not we're not paying for hosting, essentially. The Netlify hosting is free, and largely because that's, you know, that's static hosting.
I suppose the only thing we do have to say we do pay for. I mean, we've got later on, we do, like you said, a spoiler, cost to date zero. We did pay for the domain, but we already had a .NET Rambles domain, and we just created this as a subdomain of it. So
that worked quite well.
Small cost there, but yeah.
From a performance point of view, you can't really beat a static site, can you?
No, absolutely. That's it. It's huge benefits. Like you say, speed of it. We can completely optimize it, and we know it's going to stay the same. It's pretty secure as far as we're aware. We won't ever say it's 100% secure because you never know. But you know, it's got nothing to actually hack in the background, unless people can get into our GitHub action process and actually inject something. At the moment, we've got nothing on the site that allows you to do forms. There's no sort of way to get stuff injected into it, really. We've got no entry points into it, so it should be fairly safe.
Fairly safe, yeah.
And the biggest thing, it's very simple, it's low cost, and it runs quick, which is what we're after.
Exactly, it gets indexed well by Google. A lot of ticks there. It might be worth quickly me running through, just from a package point of view, what, you know, if I look at the solution and look at all the NuGet packages that we're using. I've already touched on the fact that we're using the XML type provider, so that comes from fsharp.data. We were using the fsharpx.async package, which just gives you some nice async mapping and binding simple functions. So rather than using the computation expression around the async, around async types, we opted to use that slightly different style of .map and .bind. We already mentioned that we're using handlebars.net. We're using markdig for the markdown. We're doing some slugify.core operations, you know, where we've got URL-friendly episode slugs URL. We were using lucene.net, so that used obviously lucene.net and the lucene.net sort of supporting packages around that, but we're no longer using that. We've since moved to algolia.search, and we're also using argue, aren't we, to parse command line arguments, which helps a lot. On that F-sharp console app. So, there's not a great deal to it. If we look at the number of lines of code, it's fairly small.
It is.
And as you said, didn't take us very long to create.
No, that's it. It was like a fairly quick build and then a few test cycles to sort of, and it's, again, because it's generating a static site like this, you pretty much get everything generated at once. And it was quite simple to have, obviously, the existing episodes we're hitting, we've already got sort of a data source with the RSS feed.
Yeah.
So it's quite easy to sort of build it, test it locally. And again, because it's static, your environment basically is a browser, and just run it through the browser, double check everything works, and yeah, it's all good to go.
So, you know, we've touched on that GitHub build action, the fact that it builds the F-sharp, runs the F-sharp, deploys the publish thing out to Netlify. And finally, it sets up a scheduled deployment, doesn't it? So we can actually release those episodes.
That's right. Because we realized normally, of course, a GitHub action is based on a developer doing something. You push code, or you approve a PR which gets merged in, or whatever. Of course, with this, it wasn't actually us touching the code so much. It's because what we'll do is we'll record this maybe at the beginning of the week, or maybe late on Friday. And generally, we try and publish these on a Friday morning. But obviously, we might have pushed it early and it's not ready to go yet because we haven't published it, because these also the recording software we use has a publish date, so we can actually sort of do this today and say actually release it on Friday. So of course we're not actually going to push any code on Friday because we might be somewhere else doing something. So what we used is we used a scheduled deployment in GitHub Actions. Again, it's just a cron setting that you can put on there, and at 10 o'clock every morning, every Friday morning GMT, it triggers a deployment of it that'll go away and pull anything new in, generate the site and push it out. So yeah, push that was quite nice. So you've got basically got scheduled tasks built in there, which is great.
Yeah, lovely. Excellent. So once we built the first version, as with all software, we put it out and we thought, oh, wouldn't it be good to do these other 10 things? So we did some tweaking, didn't we?
We did. We did. Yeah.
What did we do after?
So I focused quite a lot on, and when the website went out, obviously it's just things like looking at how efficient it is and SEO. I think you started looking more at the SEO stuff. I started looking more at the actual website. You know, was it, had we sort of optimized things like graphics? Had we optimized the CSS or JavaScript? Because we pulled in Bootstrap.
Yeah.
You know, the first thing we did with Bootstrap, you just put it all in. So you've got the minimized files of everything. I put on here, we're using about 80% of it. So we used an online tool just to remove the chunk that we're not using, because it's pointless. I know people can download it once and it's there cached, but we thought we'll try and tidy it up so that we'll only pull down what we need.
Yeah.
So that was quite, there's a useful tool called purifycss.online that allows you to do that, which is quite nice. And as I said, things like images, WebP is a more recent web format, which is more optimal. Then things like JPEG or PNG. So we did that, and then things like lazy loading images. We realized, of course, as you get more episodes, there's no point in loading the images you haven't seen yet. So we wanted to have it so that images only get loaded as you scroll down the page. So we did that sort of thing. And then you went away and did more with the, like I said, the SEO and the analytics side.
Absolutely,
what you did on that?
Registering the site with Google, you know, stock standard stuff just to get it visible. Mm-hmm. We started off with Google Analytics, but have since moved to Squeaky AI, haven't we?
That's right. Yeah, purely because, you know, Google Analytics is the go-to one that everybody sort of uses, but then you sort of hear about privacy and all these sorts of things, and we thought, well, do you know what? we can afford to try different things and see what we get. And this Squeaky AI is quite nice. It's, again, it's got a free tier. It gives you a recording of people's sessions as well, so you can actually see people going on the site and where they actually click and stuff. So it's quite interesting. I've never used it, so I thought chuck it on there and give it a try, see what it does. Give it a go.
Absolutely. And things like adding, you know, Twitter meta tags and missing security headers and all of that sort of stuff, you know, all of that sort of stock standard stuff you'd want to do for a public-facing API. So let's tally up all of the services that we're using and just sort of hammer home that point that it's not costing us a great deal. Yeah. So we use Anchor Podcasting to actually to host the podcast, and that costs us how much?
Yeah, that's free. No cost. Yeah.
Excellent. We store our source code in GitHub, and that costs us how much?
Yeah, again, that's free, even for private repos, which is what we've got. It doesn't have to be a private repo. It could be public, but it's just we didn't know what was going to go in there. But yeah, free.
Exactly. We host the static site on Netlify, which how much does that cost us again?
Again, I think that's roughly free.
That's free. Excellent. Yeah. We are using Cloudflare. How much is that costing us?
Again, it's just using their free services. We don't need anything complicated. So yeah, just free.
That's free. We've got some Algolia search functionality, which we've already touched on. And how much was that one again?
I think that's free. As long as we don't go over 10,000 searches a month, which we're just under at the moment, I think. So.
We're right on the limit there, actually, aren't we?
It is. But even then, if we hit another 1,000 searches, it's a dollar. So we might be able to scrape together some change to pay that.
We could support that. So adding all of those costs up, what's our overall cost?
Let me just go back through this. So, 8, 3, 5. Free. Doesn't cost us anything. Zero.
Well, that's the result, isn't it?
It is. We've achieved our goal. Yeah,
we have. Yeah. So apart from the free hosting, we've touched on the point already, but we've gone for a slightly different option here with this statically generated approach. We didn't need anything fancy, as we've talked about. You know, we don't have any dynamic content really. The content changes once per episode. Once the episode goes out, it's effectively immutable. It's a bit like a news site like the BBC, although BBC is a massive, complex site. But effectively, you publish a story, we publish a podcast, and it stays like that forever.
Only if we need to make corrections to it, generally, do we go back and edit them ever. But it's very rare. We're quite lazy in that respect. We just literally grab whatever we've got in there, publish it with typos and all sorts in it.
Exactly. Rough and ready.
It is very rough and ready.
And it was fast to get up and running, and we don't have any operational sort of maintenance tasks associated with this. Once we're published, it's a static site; it just sits there. So
absolutely. That's a big thing. I mean, we hear it a lot now about cloud computing. When you hear different companies are now starting to actually review it and sort of think, actually, would this be cheaper to bring back in house? But ours really is taking advantage of the cloud, that everything's free. We've got no reason to think it's ever going to be any different. It really doesn't matter if there's an outage and any of the Netlify's down for some reason. It's not critical. So it all made sense to us. We don't need to do, I don't want to be on holiday and have a message saying the site's down and have to work out how to get it back up.
Exactly.
No problem
for
me.
Works well for us. There are other options we could have used. And there's options that we considered and probably options that we don't even know about. But we went for the static site. Seems to be working well for now. But as with all good pieces of software, we do have quite a backlog, or we've got a wish list of things that we want to add to it. Things like it's a fairly simple site at the moment, isn't it? It's basically list the episodes, you can play the episodes, you can search the episodes, but things like allowing suggestions for an episode would be a great thing to add.
It would be we'd quite like to get feedback on it to sort of see if people like a subject or that we touched on something they'd like more about it. We'd like people to be able to suggest things. Obviously they can do that via Twitter at the moment, but be good on the website to be able to do it.
Absolutely. Things like being able to suggest a random fact and an OS utility of the week. That'd be quite nice. So basically accepting input through the site again, and people will be thinking, well, as soon as you start doing that, that's going to break your static model potentially. And perhaps it will. Perhaps we'd have to, take a similar approach to what we've done with the search in that a portion of the site may need to run on a server to accept input.
It might do. Yeah. Or we'll find a free tool. We'll find a free service, I'm sure.
Exactly.
Supports it.
In terms of the playback, if we think of big sites like YouTube, where you've got video timelining and you can jump straight to pieces in the content. That'd be nice for us to have, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
audio timeline.
It would. Yeah, yeah, it would look quite smart there. Yeah, yeah, it'd be clever.
Yeah, of course. And then, you know, thinking to the back office sort of operational sort of metrics, yeah, that'd be cool. Nice to.
Yeah, we're starting to get that, like I said, about the analytics software. We've got listens and stuff like that. We can see what popular episodes. So we've got some of it. But yeah, we just want to maybe build some little tools around it for ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, there are a number of things. And again, this list will continue to grow. The more we think about it, the more we'll add to it. You know, things like making the random fact and the OS utilities searchable, you know, so having a repository on the site that you could go through it and search. And even, you know, coming back to the visual design, again, we're not designers. We've used Bootstrap and we've knocked together something quite quickly, but there's a lot we could do with it.
Things are smart design. What's wrong with it? Who needs designers?
So there we are. So as with any good site, we've got our own backlog, and we'll chip away at that and we'll add things.
It's a little pet project, isn't it? So
exactly. That covers the site in a nutshell. We've got about a minute to do OS utility.
We have. We're on a bit of a deadline today, aren't we? Because I've got to shoot off. So, but yeah, let's jump on the OS project or utility of the week. And this week, obviously, it relates to what we were doing. We touched on it, is Lucene.net, because we started using it, and it's a great tool. I've used it before. I think you've used it before in some projects. It's a really, really good tool. I mean, we did use it because it was great, but it just didn't fit into our sort of idea of having no infrastructure and not paying for anything. So, but it's basically, it's a port of the Lucene search library that's written in C#. So it's very easy for us to sort of use it and do things with it. It's very mature. It's been out for a long, long time. And again, it's a NuGet package. You bring it in and then basically set up a search model for it. And then you can just use your code to search for it.
Yeah, uses the concept of a document that you create, and you build an index around those documents, and then you can search for those documents. Super performant, like you've mentioned. It's actually the basis for products like Solr and Elasticsearch. They all use Lucene.
Yeah, they do, don't they? Yeah, Elasticsearch was built on top of it, which is a really clever idea.
So, yeah, absolutely.
It's an example of using a really, really good OS project and building a business around it on top of a very powerful, solid bit of code.
Yeah, absolutely. It's got loads of functionality. You've got very low level control around how things are indexed and how your searches work. Lucene.net.apache.org is the site to go to check it out.
Worth looking at if you've not used it before. It's definitely a good one to know about. So.
Marvelous. Fantastic. Well, I think that wraps us up. That was a whistle stop tour through our static site, and it's been enjoyable.
It was, hopefully that's useful to people to sort of understand what powers it and why we did it. So that's fantastic to talk about again. Good to refresh our memories as well, because we did it a little while ago now. So it was good to go back through it all and double check everything. So,
absolutely. Marvellous. Well, until next time.
Yeah, great. Thanks a lot. Been good talking to you again. And, good stuff. Speak to you soon.
Cheers, Andy. Bye. Cheers, Ron.